Court calls United States v. Knapp. Counsel for the appellant, please.
Good morning, Chief Judge Baker, honorable members of the court. I'm Captain Isaac Kinnan. Myself and Captain Nicholas Carter represent the appellant in this case, Airman Knapp. May it please the court. Your Honors, the Air Force Court was correct in finding that error was plain and obvious in this case when the government, during its case in chief, during direct examination, had Special Agent Peachy, an Air Force Office of Special Investigations investigator, testify that he had received specialized training allowing him to determine, allowing him to pick up on nonverbal cues, and that using that training, after observing Airman Knapp during the interrogation, he was able to determine that Airman Knapp was showing signs of deception. That evidence was offered during the government's case in chief. It was offered again during redirect examination by the government, and at that point in time, there was a defense objection preserving this issue for appeal.
But you're not saying that plain error doesn't apply to the first one. Or does plain error apply, or was this whole thing preserved?
Your Honor, there was no objection to the...
There was no objection to the first one, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
The error in this case was prejudicial because of the fact that it was offered regarding the ultimate issue in this case. And this honorable court has put forward that proposition in the United States versus Casper that when the...
Well, it's not the ultimate issue. It's the credibility, isn't it? The ultimate issue is, did he do it or not? I mean, did the government prove beyond a reasonable doubt? What you're saying is he's testifying to is the witness's credibility, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Right. Okay.
The witness, Special Agent Peachy, testified regarding the appellant's credibility with regard to his exculpatory version of events. The appellant had offered an exculpatory version of events to Special Agent Peachy during the interrogation, and indeed the appellant testified to that exculpatory version of events during trial. And so Special Agent Peachy's testimony regarding him having expertise and having applied that expertise, the appellant contends went to the ultimate issue in the case, whether the appellant's version
now,
of events could be
applied. Are you here to advocate the adoption of a Jones test? Are you satisfied with Casper? Should we just do contextual analysis and identify those factors in a particular case that are relevant? Which law would you be advocating at this time, regardless of the facts of your case?
Your Honor, the appellant believes that this court's decision in Mullins, with the context case, provides adequate guidance to the field and to subordinate courts in order to apply the correct law to this issue. The Jones case, which was a decision from the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals, is helpful, except for the third factor, which weighs into whether or not the appellant, the trial defense counsel, objected at trial or requested curative instructions. Whether or not trial defense counsel objected and requested an instruction, human lie detector evidence is plain on its face, and the military judge should be expected to correct that erroneous evidence once it's been offered.
On the third instance that you are arguing today regarding the red sun blotches,
yes, Your Honor.
Could you indicate how the record reflects or does not reflect Special Agent Peachy linked the sun blotches to a conclusion about deception?
Your Honor, the argument we would make would be that Special Agent Peachy's testimony during direct examination regarding having received training on how to pick up nonverbal cues and having reached a conclusion therefrom, that testimony taints all of the testimony regarding nonverbal cues that the government later elicited during the trial. That essentially every time Special Agent Peachy then testified that, hey, I noticed that he had sun blotches on his face, he was referring back, and in the member's mind, it would refer back to his previous conclusion as to what those nonverbal cues meant.
So it incorporates by reference all earlier discussion of nonverbal cues?
Yes, Your Honor.
In essence. How do you deal on prejudice with the fact that defense counsel introduced or put in the whole video of the interview so that the members there can see the sunblotches for themselves or not, and so on?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, I would draw a distinction between Special Agent Peachy's testimony regarding nonverbal cues and his testimony regarding having training and being able to apply that training to determine an ultimate conclusion as to whether the appellant was lying during the interrogation. Testifying about the nonverbal cues is probably admissible and not problematic. The next step of testifying about what that means asserts the role of the paramedics in determining credibility of witnesses. And in this case, being that it went to the credibility of the appellant who testified at trial, it was prejudicial error. But
they have at defense request, they already have the whole interview before them.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So the prejudicial plus is the fact that you have Peachy saying that I'm trained in nonverbal cues and this is what it means?
Yes, Your Honor. That is the crux of the prejudice in this case, from the appellant's point of view, is that the members were permitted to abandon their own job of finding the credibility of the appellant and rely instead upon what purported to be an expert opinion derived from physiological responses that Special Agent Peachy had been trained to.
Did the government present Peachy as an expert, a scientific expert, or an expert in nonverbal cueation?
Your Honor, the government did not seek to qualify Special Agent Peachy as an expert. The appellant's position is there is no such expert, that the government could not qualify anyone as an expert in reading nonverbal cues to determine whether they're a liar or not. But no, Your Honor, the government did not attempt to do so with Special Agent Peachy.
And explain, I know that you went into it in your brief, but explain why the military's and judge's instruction didn't cure any prejudice that otherwise might have accrued in this case.
Your Honor, I believe it would be very difficult for the military judge to cure prejudice when it goes so directly to the credibility of the testifying appellant. But to the extent that that could have been done with the standard witness credibility instruction, the military judge undermined the standard instruction by giving a false exculpatory statement instruction, which instructed the members that they should consider the possibility that the appellant had lied during the interrogation, and they should consider all evidence, which would include Special Agent Peachy's supposed expertise, in determining whether the appellant's version of the charged events was a lie or not.
Did the defense request a human lie detector instruction?
No, Your Honor.
They did not. Did they object to the judge's instructions?
No, Your Honor.
They did not.
No, Your Honor. The only objection that was offered
was to the redirect.
That's correct.
Right.
Your Honor, may I summarize?
You may.
Honorable judges, the military judge erred by allowing the members to consider a law enforcement agent's pseudoscientific human lie detector testimony when determining whether the appellant's corroborated exculpatory testimony could be believed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government, please.
Thank you, Chief Judge Baker, and may it please the court. I'm Captain Thomas Alford, along with Mr. Gerald Bruce, represent the United States in this case. The military judge did not plainly err by allowing the testimony of Special Agent DP because the civilian defense counsel opened the door to the voluntariness of appellant's confession in his opening statement.
Okay, so you take issue with CCA. CCA found plain error, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, you take issue with CCA's finding a plain error, not just its finding a no prejudice.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
What about the law of the case doctrine? Did you appeal that issue?
We did not, Your Honor, but because it's a plain error analysis, we believe that you're still going to have to look at whether there was error, whether it was plain. So in this particular case, we believe that you would still have to look at the entire issue. Now, appellant confessed both orally, that's Prosecution Exhibit 5, and in writing, and that's in the Joint Appendix, page 277 through 280.
Wait, can you go back for a second?
Yes, Your Honor.
You're arguing no plain error because open door? Or are you arguing this isn't human lie detector stuff, period?
Well, under the plain error analysis, Your Honor, the first question is whether there's error and then
right.
whether there's
so plain. Stop there for a second. Would it be error in any of these three instances to admit it, absent the open door?
In this particular case,
I just want to make sure what is the difference of view whether this is human lie detector stuff or whether it's all because of the open door? That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yes, Your Honor. And if you look at this testimony in this particular case, and if you look at the test in Casper, and the test in Casper is says that human lie detector testimony is an opinion as to whether the person was truthful in making a specific statement regarding a fact at issue in this case. In this particular case, that statement, the government would assert, is not a specific statement about a fact in this case. So to answer your question, we do not believe that there was error in the first place. Now, looking at the opening the door analysis, that goes to whether, even if you do find that there was error, whether it was plain and obvious for the military judge then to recognize that this is human lie detector testimony that he should have sua sponte done something about.
Isn't his statement to the OSI a specific statement about a fact at issue in the case, namely, what happened?
Well, Your Honor, if you actually look at the specific statement, he's talking about just generally whenever the appellant would talk about sexual intercourse, he wouldn't look at him. And then the trial counsel...
Isn't sexual intercourse or its lack the sine qua non of the case?
Well, Your Honor, if you look at the defense counsel's opening statement, actually, and that's on... That's in the joint appendix on page 16 through 19... He says, we agree with 90% of what the government's going to say in this case. We agree that sexual intercourse happened. The defense counsel made this issue, the sole issue of the case, was consent. And the agent did not testify about consent. He was testifying generally. It was not a definitive statement.
You've got a confession to something. You just said you did.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And what's the confession to? An act of intercourse without consent, right?
That's correct,
okay. QED.
If you look at versus Casper, when in Casper, the agent came in and testified, when she wasn't answering our questions and when she was avoiding things, we didn't think she was being truthful. But when she held up her finger and she said, and they interpreted that to mean that she had used ecstasy one time, that she gave all the indicators of being truthful. In this case, that's not what you have. He was just generally saying, I think that he was being...
He's saying, I'm trained to detect prevarication, and in my opinion, this is prevarication.
And if Your Honor decides that that was an error to admit that, then we can look at whether under Casper, the military judge should have still let...
Well, that's not the question here. You're going off on it's not even human lie detector testimony.
That's correct, Your Honor,
okay.
Because under that specific test in Casper, that it has to be about a specific statement that the appellant made. He wasn't referencing any specific statement. He wasn't referencing consent.
Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. Moving on to if you do find that there was error, and looking at then the next test is whether it was plain and obvious, and the test that this court uses is United States against Burton at 67 MJ 150. An error is not plain and obvious if, in the context of the entire trial, the accused fails to show that the military judge should be faulted for taking no action, even without an objection. And the key there, I think, Your Honor, is the context. And when you look at the context of this particular case, the defense counsel, in his opening statement, brought the voluntariness of the confession, not just the voluntariness, but the length of the interrogation as well, into question. And the error cannot be claimed to the military judge because based on Casper, the defense should not be able to challenge the length and coercive nature of the interrogation without opening the door to the government explaining why it took so long and what tactics the agents used. Appellant's story had changed. He acknowledged that when he testified.
So if he opens the door, as you say he did, and the witness says, and then he's asked, why did this take so long? He says, because the guy is a stinking liar, and it took that long to pry it out of him. Would that be error? Or is the door open to that?
Well, Your Honor, I think that even though a door is open, the military judge still has an obligation under Military Rule of Evidence 403 to say there are some things
take
that are just too prejudicial.
Out of it and just insert liar, and it took that long to pry it out of him.
I think in that particular case, dirty, stinking liar would qualify as something that would be...
Well, I said strike that. If you strike the adjective, is it error?
I think...
Or was the door open to that?
I think looking at Casper, that if voluntariness is an issue, because Casper isn't concerning whether the confession was voluntary, it was whether there was even a confession to begin with. And the dissent points that out, and the majority seems to incorporate that. In this particular case, the defense counsel made that a central issue.
Can I ask the question a different way?
Yes, Your Honor.
If the defense opens the door in the manner that you said, is the government free to introduce human lie detector evidence? Putting aside what is or isn't, but just that's the statement of law. You appear to be arguing that if the defense opens the door by saying the interview was coercive, the government can march in 39 experts to present human lie detector evidence.
I think if you're looking at the actual test under Casper, and if it qualifies under Casper, that is what the government is trying to offer, I think you would still have a problem.
Okay, so you're not saying human lie detector evidence is admissible if the defense opens the door to discussion of the interview?
No, Your Honor, but I think that's why the government was looking at the Jones test, and we understand that obviously the Air Force Court is not binding on this court, but it is, and the appellant seems to recognize this, it's a good framework because it lays out the different things that this court looks at when determining whether this is actually plain error, whether the judge should have stopped it in midstream.
I'm not sure I fully understand your opening the door philosophy here. Is it your view that if the defense has opened the door, that justifies inadmissible testimony?
It can in some cases, Your Honor.
And how so?
I believe there is...
It seems to me that if testimony is inadmissible, it's inadmissible. I agree that it may go to whether the error was plain or obvious, but I still think that it is error and it's inadmissible.
I think in certain instances, and if we look at the... there's opening the door. There's cases that deal with opening the door and opening statement, and then there's also cases that discuss invited error, like United States against Inges. And I think in those instances, when there are certain instances where the defense counsel can open the door, and there is where it would be otherwise inadmissible, then it can come in. And I believe Casper even talks about that. I believe that Judge Crawford does discuss that in her dissent, but she lists a number of cases that talk about opening the door.
In those cases, in the invited error cases, doesn't the defense do something to bring in testimony or evidence that otherwise wouldn't be admissible, and then the government is allowed to further explore that?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think in this case, when the defense counsel got up and he talked about that in his opening statement, he said, they broke him. This went until midnight, and finally he just capitulated and he gave him this confession. By doing that, then, that brought this issue... an issue.
So in your view, if this in fact was human lie detector testimony, that would justify it, that opening statement?
Not necessarily, Your Honor, but that's why it goes to it's a case-by-case analysis. And in this particular case, when you look at the facts, appellant is conceding that his story changed. Appellant concedes that there was deception going on. That also goes to the prejudice, too. But he got up on the stand and he said, yeah, I lied. So the defense counsel shouldn't be able to come back and claim error when their whole theory of the case was that there was some deception.
Wait a minute. You're saying
he admitted to lying, and therefore human lie detector evidence, because it was right, is admissible? Is that what you're saying?
No, Your Honor, but...
I know you're saying it's not human lie detector, but you seem to be saying that, assuming arguendo it is, the fact that he admitted to lying means, okay, it's admissible because, after all, it was right.
Well, Your Honor, I think it goes to... it goes back to the defense strategy, and now we're looking at this under whether it was a plain error. Should the military judge have done something? So in looking at it in that context, even if it was an error, the error might not have necessarily been plain to the military judge, because in the opening statement, he brought this issue up, and then when he testified, then he opened the door, and then he kicked the door in, basically, on his cross-examination.
Can you talk about prejudice, since the court below found plain error?
Yes, Your Honor. Yeah, the test for prejudice is under United States v. Boyd, and that the appellant in this case has to prove the error was so significant as to influence the outcome of the trial. Also, U.S. v. Mullins, this court talks about showing an undue influence on a jury's role in determining the facts in this case. And the factor this court looks at under Mullins are the instructions given, whether there are any questions, and then the strength of the government's case. Like I mentioned in the beginning, the appellant confessed both orally, that's Prosecution Exhibit 5, and in writing. And that's the Joint Appendix 277 through 80. And the members saw the full confession because the Civilian Defense Council put that into evidence. Not only that, but the Civilian Defense Council actually, if you look at the, and it's not in the Joint Appendix, so I apologize for that, Your Honor, but if you look at the record on page 704, the military judge gives a specific instruction about polygraph evidence, not human lie detector evidence, polygraph evidence that the defense counsel willingly put into evidence, because that was in the confession where the agents confronted him and said, if you took a polygraph, you would lie. And that goes also to, if you look at the actual substance of the confession, in the confession, the agents are saying to him, we think you're lying. You're lying to us. So that takes away any error whatsoever, because the defense counsel willingly put that into evidence and made that an issue. And also, when you look at Casper, when you look at Whitney, the members in those cases had questions about the veracity of the person testifying. In this case, you do not have that. And that goes to whether the military judge should have given that instruction as well, because the members didn't have any questions about what, after the agent sat down. In fact, there's more evidence that they didn't have their minds made up, because they continued to ask questions even after the appellant testified. They asked for the victim to come back and testify. They even asked for the appellant to come back and testify shortly before findings instructions. So that shows they didn't have their mind made up, that this wasn't a done deal once they heard that testimony. They were still listening to the evidence. In addition, you have testimony from a third party that said when the victim was left with the appellant, she was really drunk the last time he saw her, and that she was asleep under her bed covers. Appellant admitted that I stopped to put a condom on, and when I turned around, she was unconscious. I got on top of her, I started having sex with her. When a couple of minutes went by, I stopped because I thought about what I was doing, and it was wrong. And that's at the Joint Appendix at page 228 as well as 279. Appellant also testified that he took the broken condom and that he had thrown in the trash can. He took it away the following morning so that she couldn't see the evidence. Appellant also testified that he had a motive to lie on the stand. This evidence was never used in the trial counsel's closing argument. And you also have DNA evidence as well. With respect to the fourth prong, and I know under U.S. v. Humphreys, this court has rejected that analysis, but under the fourth prong, it does appear that the appellant is conceding that that may be a prong that this court should consider on page 12 of his brief. And if you look at that fourth prong, whether this testimony seriously affects the fairness, integrity, or public reputation of the trial, we would assert that it does not, because anybody looking into this trial would see that the defense counsel brought this up continuously. He even brought in evidence of not just human lie detector, but an actual lie detector. Now, with respect to the testimony on redirect examination, we would assert that that is invited error, Your Honor. If you look at the cross-examination by the Civilian Defense Counsel, this is what he asks the agent. Okay, now why is it then, or isn't it true that when my client tells you, you know, what happened, and he says, she's awake, we had sex, she passed out, and then I stopped. Why isn't the case over? I mean, you've got an explanation of what happened in that room. You have no evidence to contradict what Airman Knapp said. Why isn't it over at that point? And then the agent testified, like I said earlier, I'm trained on picking up on nonverbal cues during interviews. Civilian Defense Counsel comes back and says, and one of those nonverbal cues is he would not look at you when it came to talking about sex. And the answer was yes. That was on a cross-examination. That goes to him, like I said, kicking the door in, and that's at the Joint Appendix, page 105. I'd also like to point out to this court as well that the Civilian Defense Counsel admitted, and he brought up in his closing argument, that the appellant was ashamed of talking about sexual intercourse, even with the sane nurse. So he brings this issue up again. So it's not just about that he was ashamed to talk about sex generally with the OSI agent, but also with the sane nurse. And if there are no further questions, Mr. Chief Judge, I would like to briefly conclude.
Actually, I have a question for you. In your briefs, you refer to the instructions from the military judge, and you essentially state that it supports your position. However, in those instructions, the military judge stated, quote, in deciding what weight or significance, if any, to give to the accused statement, you should consider, and one of those points was, other evidence presented in this trial. Further, the judge instructed, you have the duty to determine the believability of the witnesses. In performing this duty, consider the extent to which each witness is either supported or contradicted by other evidence. Now, other evidence introduced in this trial was the statement from the agent that he received special training, and that based on that he could determine that the initial statement of the accused was wrong. So instead of actually helping, wasn't the military judge compounding the problem?
Well, Your Honor, I think in light of the credibility instruction that he gave, that was given also at the same time, the government would assert that it did not compound it, because he said that it is your sole duty to be able to determine the credibility of witnesses. And under RCM 1005, subsection F, the onus is on the appellant to bring that up at trial. He should have objected, and if he does it, then it is a plain error analysis. And just one last point with respect to prejudice, I want to direct this court's attention to the Joint Appendix at page 282. And this is during the appellant's confession. And during his interview, they ask him, whatever you did, put the condom on. You said you went over to her, got on top of her, started having sex with her. Appellant says, uh-huh. That's when you realize she wasn't moving. No, she wasn't moving. She wasn't doing nothing. How long were you having sex with her? A couple minutes. The military judge did not plainly err by allowing the testimony of Special Agent DP on direct examination, nor did he abuse his discretion by allowing the agent to testify about demeanor evidence on redirect examination after the Civilian Defense Counsel opened the door even farther. This court should see appellant's argument for what it is, a vain attempt to explain away his clear admission of guilt. This court should thus affirm the findings and sentence of the trial court below. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Now have rebuttal from the appellant, if you wish.
Thank you, Chief Judge Baker. Thank you, members of this honorable court. With regard to whether there was an open door and whether that precludes plain error review, I just respectfully request this court review its decision in Mullins, where in Mullins, this court conducted a plain error review. It did not rule in favor of the appellant in that case, but it conducted a plain error review, even though defense counsel did not object. And defense counsel in Mullins even cited the illicit testimony in their own closing argument, and this court still conducted a plain error review.
Which of the three instances that you argue do you think is your strongest case? First, with respect to whether it is, in fact, human lie detector evidence, and then second, with respect to prejudice?
Your Honor, with regard to whether it is human lie detector evidence, the Air Force Court got it right. This is clear. I don't know how you could have a more explicit statement of human lie detector evidence, that I've received training that allows me to pick up on nonverbal cues, and reading those nonverbal cues, I've concluded that the appellant is being deceptive. I can't imagine a more explicit statement of human lie detector testimony. With regard to prejudice, clearly the fact that it was human lie detector testimony is the appellant's strongest argument. With regard to prejudice, the fact that that human lie detector testimony was with regard to a central issue in the case, in fact, the central issue in the case, necessitates a finding of prejudice. That the members, before the appellant even took the stand in his own defense, had already been told that he could not be believed regarding that accounting of events. That a supposed expert in human lie detector testimony had already seen all of his nonverbal cues and decided that there was deception going on. That is where the prejudice arises in this case, that it usurped the ability of the panel members to assess the appellant's credibility. They had already been prejudiced long before he even took the stand. And the military judge did nothing to correct that. The military judge didn't give an immediate instruction to correct it before making the appellant take the stand, and then the closing instructions only exacerbated the prejudice, Your Honors. With regard to the plain and obvious standard under Burton that the government counsel referenced, appellant contends that the error became plain to the extent that it wasn't already plain. Once Special Agent Peachy testified to having training that allowed him to determine that some sort of deception was going on, the military judge should have caught that and should have known that that was plain error. But to the extent that the judge missed that, when civilian defense counsel stood up and objected and specifically referenced human lie detector testimony, that error should have been all too plain. And the military judge should have given a curative instruction on the spot and should have given properly crafted closing instructions as well. The government counsel also referenced that court members had not made up their minds and that they were asking questions, and that indicated that they didn't just buy Special Agent Peachy's expertise wholesale. Well, that actually goes directly to the final Mullins context-based standard. If the members weren't buying it, then that undercuts the argument that the government's case is overwhelming. If the members were not buying it, then that only makes Special Agent Peachy's supposed expertise regarding whether appellant was being truthful all the more problematic. That concludes my presentation.
Any additional questions? Okay. Thank you, counsel. The court thanks both counsel, and the case is now submitted and will stand in recess until further order of the court. Thank you very much.
All rise. The court stands adjourned until further order of the court.